Lee Brown. This is Crazy Shit in Real Estate. Today, you're going to get a little bit of motivation, friends. You're going to get a little more personal story and a little less of the crazy, although we always have some, as you hear from a former SEC football coach, assistant, but still in the system. Red Taylor is with us today. You're going to get all the Southern accents you ever wanted, but you're going to leave with a little more enthusiasm for what you're doing. So enjoy the conversation. And I'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to Crazy Shit in Real Estate. You'll be amazed at all these wild but true situations that others have found themselves in. Because on this show, you'll hear uncensored, unbelievable stories from the world of real estate. I'm Lee Brown. Let's dive right in.
Before you get the rest of the story, I'd love to share a quick message from today's sponsor. If you've never heard of Follow-Up Boss, you're going to love it. It's going to get you organized in a way that will actually impact your business for profitability and for better excellence with those you're serving. For more information, go to followupboss.com/crazy. So talk to me a little bit about where you're located, what you do in the world, in and around real estate. Give us a little bit of the red story besides the middle school football name.
Yeah. Is this the beginning? Are we recording right now? Is this it?
We are. I always record because we just have a conversation. This is not a really fancy podcast with like super big notes and big fancy microphones in front of me or any of that.
Yeah, I can relate. So yeah, good stuff. So first and foremost, great being with you today. Obviously, my name is Red Taylor. I am really just an entrepreneur at heart. You know, I've watched some of your podcasts, Lee. I've done some research on you. Very impressed. And reflecting on, you know, what I wanted to talk about today, because the thing that I heard you to communicate to your folks here is to bring a story and let's have a conversation. And, you know, what I thought I would do is just maybe tell my story a little bit of who I am, where I've been, where I am now, where I feel like I'm going. It's a story I feel like of perseverance, of retribution and inspiration. You know, I was born in Montgomery, Alabama. I grew up very, very poor to a single mother. My mother worked at a gas station my whole life. And it was an upbringing that, you know, I would always wanted to change. But looking back on it, I wouldn't change a thing. We didn't have anything. We didn't have nothing. Nobody gave us anything. And everything that we ever had, we had to work for. And everything I ever had, I had to work for. And so, you know, that instilled to me a discipline and a desire to always want more, to do more, to be better. Not that I ever felt like even, you know, when I was younger, I didn't feel like I necessarily deserved it, but I always wanted it. Felt like somehow, some way, I would find a way to get it to do more. And I didn't even know what more was. So it's just, I knew it, what my mom had, and what we didn't have was working at a gas station and coming home from school sometimes. And you open that front door and you reach in, you know, around there and you hit that light switch. You didn't know if the lights were going to be on or not. So that was a regular occurrence in my life. So anyways, I was able to play football and excel at being a football player growing up, and played for a dynamic, wonderful head football coach. Guy's name is Vince McCracken. He's a legend. And I give him
that's a coach name for sure.
What's that?
He had to be a coach with that name.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. This guy's responsible for making good men out of literally hundreds, maybe thousands of boys. He was a profoundly positive, impactful human being. And I am thankful to call him my friend today. So, and growing up through the high school over at Robert E. Lee in Montgomery, and you can't even say that word out loud anymore. You know, it was white guys and black guys.
I'm a history buff. Everybody knows.
Yeah. There wasn't no such thing as racism. We were all brothers. We were teammates and brothers. We loved each other. We had each other's back. We'd go to war on Friday nights.
You know, I think it's still how regular people are. It's just the Twitter mob that wants to divide us.
The Twitter mob and the mainstream media. Now, that's a different rabbit hole we can go down today, Lee. So may be another podcast, right?
Want to go? I'll go. We'll post it on Rumble. We won't get censored over there.
Yeah. But anyway, I was able to get a scholarship to go to play football at Jacksonville State University, which that would have been the only way that I would ever been able to go to college. So was very fortunate and blessed to be able to do that. I got up there and boom, first thing happened to me, I got an injury. In those days, back in 91, 92, once you got injured, they didn't keep you on. It was a Division II college, so they didn't have the money to keep the broke necks around. And so coach cut my scholarship. So I ended up having to go back home and go to work. And I mean work. I was working landscaping with my buddy Tyler Johnson, and his daddy owned a landscaping company. And that's what I started doing, you know. And so anyways, long story short, from there, you know, a few years passed by and I took other professions and whatnot and got into sales and really excelled at a young age in sales. I've always felt like I could talk to folks, relate to people because of where I'm from, man. I've never been really starstruck. I've never held a whole lot of prejudices. And I've always felt like we're going to have a good life. We're going to be good people. We got to try to look and see the best in others. And that's really kind of lent to some of my successes today. But going back, long story short, I knew I wanted to go to college and I decided that I wanted to, my dream was to be a football coach. And so through a couple of different divine connections, those are other stories as well, I was able to become one of the first 50 students to attend Alabama State University, which is a historically Black university, on a minority scholarship because the Supreme Court of Alabama ordered historically Black colleges to desegregate. And I was a minority on that campus. I didn't have money to go to school, so it was a blessing. And so I left my career in sales. My mother thought I was crazy as a bed bug. And I started school full time and I was coaching on the side at my high school. And anyways, graduated in about 2.5, 3 years, started teaching, taught at my alma mater, Robert E. Lee, coached football there for a year. And then out of nowhere, another divine intervention occurred where Tommy Tuberville, who had left Ole Miss University and gotten a job at Auburn, somehow a couple of his coaches liked me that met him at these conventions. Boom. They gave me a job at Auburn coaching as a graduate assistant. Okay.
How about that?
So what a blessing. I mean, a guy from Montgomery, Alabama, from what I've been through, grew up an Alabama fan now, mind you. So
no, I'm just hoping the Roll Tide people haven't turned us off now because they heard you say Auburn out loud. So
y'all, come on back. And you know, in the state of Alabama, you're either one or the other, and it's pure unadulterated hatred for 364 days out of the year.
Just sure. Like us with Carolina and Duke, as it must be removed from the earth, and it's just how it is.
Absolutely. So anyways, I got the job there, and I was in way over my head. I mean, I was just way over my head. And it didn't take me long, about a year, to figure out that I didn't think that was going to be the career path for me. College football coach is one of the hardest jobs on the planet. These guys, God bless them, man, they work for probably 48 weeks out of the year. They're going to work about 60 to 80 and sometimes 100 hours a week, okay? And that's just the job. It doesn't matter if you're at, you know, Podunk Division II, Division III, or if you're coaching at the University of Alabama or Clemson or Duke or North Carolina. It don't matter. It's the same job.
Well, and that was before NIL. It's triple now with that stupid transfer portal. I think the whole game is like even worse.
It's going to kill it. It's going to kill the game if they don't figure that whole thing out. So that's it. But those guys, man, they work their tails off. And I still got a bunch of buddies that are ball coaches and love them to death. Good people, good human beings. They all get in it to try to make an impact on young men's lives. I mean, that's what they do. And then they just work them to death. So I left that, went back to teaching and coaching for a little bit, moved over here to Atlanta and started a family. And, you know, after a couple of years, I decided this wasn't going to be it. I couldn't be kept sitting in a classroom all day long and making $35,000 a year. I enjoyed it. The teaching part of it, the interacting with kids, interacting, coaching kids and whatnot, but just the rules started to change. They started to go really, believe it or not, even in the early 2000s, you were going a little bit towards the woke side of things, and the admin were bearing down on you a little bit more. And it's all come from pressure and politics. I mean, whether people want to believe it or not, realize it or not, politics is a part of all of our lives. And it is a contact sport, is what I've learned over the last 15, 20 years, being a professional, being an entrepreneur and whatnot. And the more you know about it, the better you have an opportunity to be successful. After coaching and teaching for a couple of years, I decided that I wasn't going to be able to do that as a career path. And so I went to a gentleman that I knew. His name was Ray Broadway. And Ray was a friend of mine. He was the president of the Georgia High School Coaches Association. He's passed on now. Wonderful human being. And I said, Coach, You know anybody that is looking for a salesman to sell some athletic supplies, you know, football helmets, shoulder pads, baseball bats, whatever? He says, no, Red. He said, I don't know anybody that's looking for that. But he said, but I did have lunch with a guy yesterday. He said, if you knew anybody want to make $100,000 a year, let him know. I said, that sounds like me.
Just been in real estate.
Insurance.
Similar sales pitch.
Similar.
Unlimited income potential.
The sky's the limit. I say, you're going to be a millionaire. So went and met with the gentleman. He was a good man. He's an older fella. He wanted me to sell these split funded annuities to all these school teachers and football coaches to supplement their retirement. I said, yeah, I can do that. So anyway, got my license and didn't actually go to work with him because as I was leaving my test, an old buddy of mine called and said, hey, you know, what's going on? I said, man, you won't believe this. I just got through getting my insurance license. He says, what? I said, yeah. He said, well, you need to come see me. He owned an insurance agency, a brokerage firm, and they did, you know, health and life. So I said, okay, let me go see him. Well, anyways, I was like, this seems better to me. So I started doing that within about 5 months, and I was doing it on the side. I was teaching and, you know, making my calls during the day, running my appointments at night till 10 o'clock, whatever time somebody would see me, I'd go see them. You know, I was young, I was 27, 28, 30. I was getting after it. So like anybody that's young, and I want everybody to understand something, you know, at the beginning of the day and the end of the day, there's no secrets to being successful. Okay. You got to work hard. Okay. You have to be willing to sacrifice what you want now for what you want most. And I'm going to say that again, it's the ability to sacrifice what you want now for what you want most. And, you know, people say, well, chase your passion, chase your dreams, chase your heart. I think that's a little overrated, guys. I have found that to be a little bit overrated because I did that personally. And I think I could have been successful as a ball coach. Don't know how happy I would, because I was good at it. I mean, you don't get a job coaching ball in the SEC as some greenie without being pretty good at what you do. God's blessed me with some talents and take that lightly. But as far as chasing your passion, a lot of times there's not a lot of money in passion.
Right.
You know, and money's not everything, is it, Lee?
No, but you got to, the work matters, though.
The work matters.
A lot of people are chasing their passion, expecting to be number one at it without doing the work. And so there's always an intersection here that absolutely has to happen.
Exactly. And in our world, in our society, money doesn't bring you happiness, but it gives you the opportunity to live a life that enables you to do some of the things that you want with the time that you have that you enjoy most.
Right.
Okay. Whether it be spending time with your family, your friends, your hobbies, what have you. Okay. And so that's, instead of chasing your passion, my advice would be to find out what you're best at, that you hate the least, and go become great at it.
Right.
That may be a better pathway to success. I think I heard Tony Robbins say that one time many years ago.
He's never held a job. All he's done is motivate people. So,
I mean, yeah, I think what he is that we could determine as successful, right?
Absolutely. I always think it's a funny analogy to use because most people need to roll their sleeves up and get dirty at some point.
Yeah. So during this time, we started having children, my wife and I, and I was chasing this business and chasing being an entrepreneur and whatnot. And things started personally at home, started taking a terrible turn as far as I was failing my marriage. I spent a lot of time with my kids. I was being a really good dad. I was being a terrible husband. And long story short, the marriage failed. And no matter what happens to you in your life, for me, I think that's always going to be a point that marks time. You know, whenever you have a failure like that, something that I never wanted to happen, that it marks time. You know, anytime you change your marriage status, it affects your children's children. And so that's something that was really devastating and tragic for some years. And that was another obstacle that I overcame. And when you think about overcoming obstacles in life, it doesn't matter where you are in life, what you do, how much success you have, how much money you have, how much health you have, how many friends you have, how many houses you have, how many apartment complexes you have, how many duplexes, how many beach houses you have, how many self-storage units you have, how many brokerage companies that you have. It doesn't matter. You're going to have hard times. They're going to show up in your life. Okay. And it's not those hard times that are going to make the difference in our lives. 99% of the time, it's how we react to them. Okay. And so what I always did was went back to the lessons that I learned early on. You got to get back up. You have to get back up and you got to play the next play. You got to play the next day. Okay. And so I tell, you know, a lot of folks now to, and my kids, my son, 17, 18, 19, 20, they're all in there young. And I tell them, hey, attack the day with enthusiasm. Today's the next day. Today's the best day of your life. It's the next opportunity you have to win and succeed. You'll never have another chance to live this day. And I'm like, Dad, just hush. You know, Dad, stop. You know, but I know that one day when they grow up, they're going to remember that, and that's going to resonate with them. And hopefully, my hope and prayer is that that'll take root in them and grow. The seed will be watered and nurtured, and that, you know, that they'll be able to grow that, and it'll be a positive impact in their life.
Have you ever driven by a house that you sold and somebody else's sign is in the yard? It's about the most painful experience any realtor will ever have. And then comes that moment of, oh, snap, it's on me. I didn't stay in great touch. And I can tell you, after 22 years in the business, I still go through that, but I've reduced the opportunities for failure because I have learned to do better with follow-up. And honestly, when you follow up better with the people you've served in the past, it's going to make you a better realtor in the future too. And that's what this program will get you. If you've never heard of Follow-Up Boss, you're going to love it. The best top producers in this business, they're already using Follow-Up Boss. So if you wondered why that person gets more business than you, it might be the program. There's like 250 integrations. So whatever you're using now probably could plug in with Follow-Up Boss. Keep everything in one place. You can decide how many and how often to follow up. It's all on you, but the system will be there. You do get a 30-day free trial for hanging out over here on Crazy Shit. Go to followupboss.com/crazy. So is this where you're going to segue into real estate? Because my audience is all about real estate, and I hope they're staying with us right now because you are a rambler, my friend.
Well, so real estate. Okay, let me segue into real estate. So my wife today is, we had a real estate brokerage company, and we actually met in real estate. I got into investments and flipping houses. And so, you know, I started looking around, started looking for homes to invest in. I was running a flourishing, successful insurance brokerage company. I'd bought a couple of condos down on the beach years back, 04, 05, all this, that, and the other. So started looking around. I always liked real estate. So we started investing in flip houses.
Hang on, back up. You said you met her in real estate. Don't be skipping over that part of the story. Was she the listing agent on one of these properties, or was she a fellow investor?
Well, she was a listing agent on a property, and she was working at the time she was a on-site new construction, and she's like, hey, listen, I've got a couple of big time investors that they pay me to find flip property for them. And I was like, really? So how's that guy? She's like, well, this is what I do. I do this, this, and this. And I sent it to her. I said, well, how much would you charge me to send them to me? So anyways,
you're not telling the whole story here, Red. Quit trying to skate it. You walked in the model one day and she was cute and she found out you were looking for investment properties. Give us the real story.
Well, something like that. Yeah. You want the relationship part or you want the real estate part?
Yes, I want the relationship since it happened in real estate. Then you can tell a quick story before our episode ends up. But I know my audience, they are dying to know how you met your wife through real estate.
Well, she was a listing agent on a property. She showed me a property. We had a conversation.
You called her off the sign. You said, hey, I want to see this condo. And she didn't know you from Adam's House Cat, went over to let you in and said, well, he might be cute.
I actually don't remember, to be honest with you.
Come on now. I bet she
does.
Come
on now.
I'm going to have to get her on the show to tell me the whole story.
Yeah. that was it. We had a mutual acquaintances as well. It was one of those situations where it started in business. They saying, you know, we're having lunch, we're having dinner, and, you know, the relationship began to flourish. So
you weren't really a creepy stalker. There was actually a friend involved. So your story's kind of boring, and that's why you're skating telling. Okay, so carry on. So she said there were some investment properties she had access to, and maybe if you had cash, you could have access to?
More or less, yeah. So I started buying flip properties. Long story short, we ended up getting married a few years later. We've been married for 8 years now. We've got 6 children, 3 and 3. We're Brady Bunch. And we have been able to transition our real estate focus away from single family housing, multiple family housing, to short-term rentals on the Gulf Coast.
Okay.
So that's kind of been our focus as far as our real estate market. Yeah, it's just a niche. We love it down. I don't know if you know where 30A is down in South Walton. So anywhere along that coast right there, we buy property and we try to hold them and just rent them.
So what's the goal with these properties? Obviously, you've spent a lot of time impacting other people. You're trying to lead in your household and lead in your family now. What's the goal with the real estate? It's got to be more than money.
You know, just leaving a legacy, I think. I think we just like real estate. It's fun and it's interesting. I think real estate's, it's a challenge. You get to use your imagination, put deals together, put so many deals together in real estate, whether it be on the buy side, the sell side, to finance these things, work in these lenders. We've got a lot of relationships with lenders and showing them how to be able to put deals together and use terms of finance to be able to work it. I really don't love finance. I think especially today with the way that the interest rates are, it's a necessary tool sometimes.
So let me ask you a question, because a lot of our audience hears about seller financing and they hear about putting these deals together, but they don't know the how. How did you get started putting the first one together? Was that you or your wife? Are y'all together walking in saying, we have a vision and we'd like for you to be a part of that? And what was the setup and the sales point of it?
The first thing that we were able to do is go into a duplex. And I kind of did this for myself. So there's a fourplex just outside Atlanta. I think he wanted somewhere around $300,000 for it. Okay. And this was 13 years ago, I guess. So anyway, I go in there and needed a ton of work to it, but it was in a good area, good location. It was going to cash flow. And I knew that the guy was in a position where he needed to get the bear off his back. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I talked to him and I said, listen, here's what I'm looking at. Okay. I'm going to have a problem getting the capital up to buy these from you, but I'd like to manage them and I'd like to turn them into something that was fruitful. I'd like to be able to put good people in here to live in these houses. Okay. If I give you 20%, $60,000, okay, will you finance the rest and give me a 5-year, 7-year, 10-year balloon when I can go either sell it or secure financing on it? And he's like, no, there's no way I can do that. You know, I don't have that kind of bag, blah, 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 blah. And so long story short, we went back and forth a few times. And finally, I sold him the picture on, hey, listen, here's what your buyout's going to be at the end. This is the way this thing's going to work. You're going to get a cash flow off of it every single month. It's not the only responsibility that you're going to have is paying the note to the bank that you have. But the money that I'm giving you is going to pay that note. And it's secured by this contract that we have. He's like, okay, sounds good. So I went in, dialed in the expenses on the apartments, fixed them up, threw some paint in them, threw some new flooring in them, got some people in there. I think they were cash flowing $4,000 or something like that back at that time. And before the 5-year note, we ended up selling them, making a couple of $100,000 and moved on.
You made it sound like an annuity.
Excuse me?
You took all that education about selling annuities and made real estate sound like an annuity.
Well, maybe so. It was imagination, Lee. It was using imagination. And
it's also education, though. You might not have positioned it as an annuity, but because you knew how they worked, you just transitioned that knowledge and the story into something he would understand, because he benefited and you benefited. True. And the defendants benefited, too, because they got better units.
Right, right. And what you said is the main factor. He benefited, I benefited, and the tip. So it was a win-win-win situation. I truly believe that if you go about your business and you look for win-win situations, if you can find ways that everybody wins, you're going to have more opportunities to be successful. And you sell that. You sell that to your buyers. You sell it to your sellers. You sell that to the folks that are involved in the deal. Okay.
And you sell it to your on-site agent when you wanted to go on a date with you.
I did. That was a tough sale too. I had to sell that one big time. So
you're like, hey, I got 3 kids. I'm divorced. I'm a total catch.
Right. So I had to do a lot of talking on that deal for sure.
All right. So in all the properties y'all have owned and managed, my audience loves a good story. What's the craziest thing you've ever seen that y'all still look at each other and say, I still can't believe we experienced that?
Lord have mercy. I mean, we had a house burned down one time right after we bought it.
After closing, it burned down?
Oh, yeah. It's like a little farmhouse. She bought it at a steal, went in and fixed it up really nice, put a renter in there, sweet little lady. And the lady had left a heater on or something like that. It's like within a month. Okay. So thank God she wasn't there. I'm sitting in my office one day, this is no lie, and one of my assistants comes in my office and says, "I'm sorry, I'm late. There was a fire." She said, I said, "Where was that?" She said, "It was over there on Sunset Road." I said, "Was it a little white house next to a church?" She said, "Yes." I called Steph. I said, "Steph, you're never going to believe this. Your house is on fire." Oh, my God. So she goes, so long story short, the little lady wasn't there. So thank God nobody was hurt. And in the end, she got an insurance settlement statement out of it. And we ended up selling the lot and making a bunch of money off of it. So
that was not recent, though, right? Because one thing that concerns me right now is how property values have skyrocketed in the 3 years of the COVID era. And a lot of folks have not adjusted the valuation on their insurance policy. So they could be caught big time sideways if they haven't gotten that updated.
Yeah, this has been about 7 years ago, I believe, maybe six, seven years ago, if I had to put a number. So, yeah. And you know, you look at today, everybody talks about the market today and what's going on in the market, how the real estate market's down, all the interest rates, you know, builder sentiment's down. And that's true. But I will tell you this. In Atlanta, we have a thriving market. Okay. People are still moving. People are still relocating. People are still getting married. People are still trying to buy houses. One of the issues that we have now is that young people, first-time home buyers, even veteran home buyers, you're competing against these iBuyers and these big mutual funds, these hedge funds. Okay.
Absolutely.
Especially down here in Atlanta, I would imagine that you guys are experiencing
Charlotte's the same way. They love it here.
Yep. Same thing. So, you know, point in case, we've got a group, a couple, sweet couple that are relocating out of Michigan down here. And every single house from, you know, 700 to a million that they say they like, we make a call on it, bang, highest and best already. Okay. And all you hear, if you turn on the news, you look at Twitter, you look all across the country, is how down the real estate market is. Okay. Well, it's down in those places that people are moving from.
Right.
To go to places where people want to be, where people know how to act right.
It's zip code by zip code. Bay Area is having a trouble, but Atlanta is positioned to be the top market next year, was the report that came out this week as we're recording this. And there's lots of reasons for that, but it's also not just Atlanta. So a savvy buyer figures out very quickly that there's different personalities of the different suburbs and the exurbs around the city. I wouldn't live in Atlanta proper, but I sure would live in some of those lovely suburbs you have.
Well, no doubt. And that's where we are. We're over here in Cobb County, which is a great place to live. And I wouldn't want to live in Atlanta. It's either inside the perimeter or outside the perimeter here.
Well, I'm not a city person. I live on 10 acres because I have chickens. And so I could never live inside Atlanta or inside Charlotte for that matter. I'm in the edges.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Would we call you a minimalist, Lee?
Well, you would probably call me a prepper. Let's just be honest. I don't even apologize for it.
There might be a stash of canned goods somewhere on your property.
Oh, if you have the password, you could find out. But if you don't have the password, you ain't getting on my property.
I love it. Love it. So, yeah. So back to that, I would think as agents, as professionals, I think we're having to work harder today because everything is still a demand driven economy. At the end of the day, never forget that economic factors, economic waves and currents are always going to flow with supply and demand. Okay. And the supply side of housing and real estate is down. There still is not enough quality supply to meet the quality of demand that's out there in good appreciating areas. And I say good appreciating, not that Michigan or that New York or California aren't good, but they don't.
They're not as good as the South. We'll just go.
They don't seem to be appreciating, do they?
I mean, it's fine, but their property taxes are too high because that's what they chose to do. So don't move here and bring your bad policies with you.
That's right.
Move here and you be cool for a minute. And we'll show you how awesome it is to live in the land of banana pudding because we know what we're doing down here. And don't y'all screw it up. So, Ed, if somebody wants to reach out to you and find out more about what y'all's investment partners are doing and how things look on the Gulf Coast, what's the best way for people to find you and connect with you?
So we've got a couple of websites. ArriveHomePartnersLLC.com is our real estate site. If you want to reach out to us, and I'll put a little plug into one of my companies, RedTaylorInsurance.com. We do health insurance for tons of real estate professionals, tons of lenders, tons of folks like us who are all entrepreneurs, self-employed, small business owners and whatnot. We have the largest faith-based healthcare sharing program out there for Christians who are looking for affordable alternatives to their healthcare that is a fantastic. I'll tell you, I'm 50 years old. My wife, we've got six kids. We've been on MediShare for 6 years now. I pay $385 a month for my health insurance, guys, for my healthcare, okay? And I wouldn't change it for the world. So health insurance programs that can help folks as well. But as far as the real estate goes, get in touch with us at Arrive Home. Myself, Stephanie, one of our team members, we kind of walk you through what our program is, what our process is. And we just like to talk to folks, man. We like to give you advice. We like to kind of to tell you what we think about the market, where we think trends are moving and where they're not moving.
All right. So there you go, friends. If you learned something or you like something or you want to have a fight, Auburn, Alabama, whatever, drop it in the comments. Give Red some thumbs up. Was that Weagle, Weagle, War Damn Eagle?
Weagle, Weagle, War Damn Eagle. Kick him in the butt, Big Blue. Hey.
See, the only reason I know that, it was some several years ago, the Auburn fans were on the way to the bowl game in Arizona, and I was the only non-Auburn person on that plane. They sang the fight song the whole way to Phoenix. They picked that airline stewardess's cart dry. And it was horrible. And the pilot even came on and was doing the stupid Weagle Weagle, War Damn Eagle, too.
Oh,
I was trapped with Auburn people.
That was the national championship game, right? That was when Cam Newton and they went out to Arizona for the national championship. Oh, you were in the wrong place at the wrong time, Lee.
16, 17, 15. It was one of those years.
13.
Is it that long ago? I know it was pre-COVID, but I can't keep track of time anymore. So, you know.
I can relate.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and giving us a little bit of motivation and a reminder to get shit done. And also the reminder that there's lots of things you get to do.
Awesome. Thanks, Lee. Great being with you.
All right, guys. Make sure you give him some love. All of his contact information is in the notes for this episode. And I'll see you next time.
Perfect.
Okay. Now, don't forget to go try Follow-Up Boss so that your business can continue to expand in professionalism and then you can meet some more crazy people yourself. I really appreciate Follow-Up Boss sponsoring this episode, but mainly I appreciate them for giving y'all double the free trial time with no credit card required. So make sure you go to followupboss.com/crazy and then let me know what you think. I'll see you guys next time.
As always, I'm so super thrilled that you joined in for more crazy shit. And if you're a realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or just a regular human being who happens to have an unbelievable story that you need to tell the world about, or frankly, you just need to one up the story you just heard, then make sure to DM me on Instagram at Lee Thomas Brown or tweet me at Lee Brown or frankly, any social network where you hang out. I'm there. And if you had some fun, then you totally want to subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes.